It's 10:15 by the clock on my computer and cell phone and Surface. And so we're going to begin. I always start on time. I always finish on time. My name is Chris Henley. I am a product strategy specialist with a company named Veeam Software. I have the pleasure of spending the next fun-filled 75 minutes talking to you about what I think is one of the hottest topics in technology, and it's about virtualizing Tier 1 applications. We call it virtualizing the last mile. And the idea here is that there are significant benefits to virtualizing infrastructure workloads, and those benefits can be had with relatively little work on your part and a little bit of planning in terms of tools that you can use to actually sustain those applications through their life cycle. With that said, I want to introduce you to a couple of fun pieces of technology. I am a Microsoft guy. Always have been and will stay that way for the foreseeable future. Today we're going to do some fun experiments. I think technology is only best used in demonstration, and so we will demonstrate some. The Windows Phone team wrote a new application for Office 2013. It's called Office Remote. I think there's no better way than this to test it out and see how it works. So I'm going to try to run the entire presentation from my Surface unit without actually touching the unit. Instead, we're going to interact via the phone app. And if it all works well, you can sing its praises online. If not, I guess we can all go rate it poorly. I have every confidence it's going to work fantastic. See? Slides advance. So we're going to cover three key topic areas today. First, we're going to talk about why would I virtualize Tier 1 applications in the first place. We're going to talk about what are the major hurdles, because there certainly are some that we ought to consider when you make a move from physical environment to virtual environment, you get a whole new environment. So we'll talk about the two different types, what are the hurdles, what are the associated solutions for them, and then we'll talk about how Veeam will actually help me through the virtualization application lifecycle. I'll introduce you to some neat tools that Veeam has built. We'll talk about the partnership between Veeam and Microsoft, why the two of us are working together, what the potential benefits are for you when you run Microsoft applications. Let's talk virtualization first. I love this definition. This is good old Wikipedia. We'll always go to them. Virtualization in computing refers to the act of creating a virtual something, I love it, rather than an actual version of something, including but not limited to a virtual computer hardware, platform, operating system, storage device, or computer network. They left one key piece off. What's missing? Yeah, the applications. We've taken for granted the fact that application workloads should be run in physical environments, and it just isn't the case. In fact, we probably should have put the applications on there first. When virtualization was developed back in the late 60s and early 70s up at Cambridge Research Center, IBM developed it so that they could run multiple applications in a virtual environment. It was the most obvious workload use case scenario from the beginning of virtualization, and yet it's the last one that we've taken on in today's world. What's the promise of virtualization? Well, the real promise behind virtualization are things that you've probably all heard of before. We're going to save you energy and cut operating costs. We're going to consolidate servers and cut operating costs. We're going to increase reliability and reduce downtime cost. We're going to increase disaster recovery ability and reduce the cost of data loss. We're going to extend the life of legacy applications. We're going to facilitate a move to what we'll call the cloud. All of those are benefits associated with moving your applications to a virtual environment, and operating systems for that matter. Now, I don't know if you guys remember. I remember it very clearly. Back in 2008, when Hyper-V came out, there was a major fear in the IT community about moving to a virtualization environment. We were worried that we would see IT jobs lost. We were worried that server consolidation would cut the need for traditional job functions like, the guy who managed all of the disks and the guy who managed all of the servers and the hardware acquisitions, and all of those things would go away. We were worried that because we were working with less physical servers, that the IT group would no longer have functional work to do. And what we've actually seen is the opposite. I'm assuming it's the same in your environment, where we used to have one IT guy that managed 100 servers, and now we have one IT guy that manages 500 servers. The idea of physical server sprawl has gone, but the concept of virtual server sprawl has stepped in and taken its place. I was having breakfast this morning with a gentleman who's actually doing a session in another room talking about Veeam and Store Simple. And he made a comment. I think it's very valuable, and I want to kind of share it with you. He said there's this concept in the world that he works in, and it's called change equals fear. I kind of smiled. I thought, what a great way to say it. Yeah, change does oftentimes equal fear. He made this comment, and I think this is good. Change also, in his case, equals value. He can add additional value to his IT organization by adopting changes. We were talking specifically about the adoption of Azure, but the same functionality, or the same concept is certainly valid when we talk about virtualization. So what are the technical challenges of running Tier 1 applications in a virtual environment? Let's stop here for just a quick second. Let's talk about what I mean when I say Tier 1 applications. There are four key applications that we look at when we start talking about virtualization with Tier 1 apps. They are, anybody want to guess? Active Directory. Here, I've got a 8-gig memory stick for you. Active Directory is the first one, which is interesting because it's the last one that was supported. What else? See, there's three of you. All right, can you catch? Exchange. Ready? Nice, one-handed catch. There's a baseball team down the road that could use your help. Sorry. What are the other two? SharePoint. Ready? Oh, that was a bad throw. Throwing error. What's the last one? SQL. Here you go. Another one-handed. First base, second base. Yes, so we do need a good shortstop. So when we talk about virtualizing Tier 1 applications, we really focus in on those four key ones. Active Directory, Exchange, SQL, and SharePoint. They seem to take the bulk of what we call the infrastructure workload. It's not coincidental that all of those are based on database backends. They're doing transaction processing. We're managing a large amount of data in an acquisition and change environment in each of those applications. Now, I realize there are tons of other applications that you might use, and they might provide significant support to your organization. Today, when we talk about virtualization the last mile, I'll use those four core applications as kind of our points of illustration, but please know that we could extend the concepts that we're talking about out to just about any application that you're thinking of. One of the big things that's happened around these core applications in an environment is the fact that we have this up-and-coming hypervisor, I don't know what you want to call it. We used to call it the hypervisor wars back in 2012. Now I'm switching. It's no longer, well, I guess it depends on who you ask. For me, it's no longer about a war. I'm an IT guy. I made the realization that I'm probably going to have not just one hypervisor, but there is a strong likelihood that I'm going to run multiple hypervisors in coexistence. There are two standouts, Hyper-V, VMware. It's likely that you're going to see those run side by side for several years to come. Most businesses can't afford to just drop their investment in VMware and walk away from it. By the same token, there's not a lot of businesses that can afford to ignore the capabilities of Hyper-V at the expense of continuing to run VMware. So, regardless of what you choose, when we start talking about running Tier 1 applications in a virtualized environment, they're going to have to be supported on multiple platforms. So we'll call it a hypervisor coexistence issue, and I'll give you some pointers as to how to overcome some of this. One of the other technical challenges is the appropriate resource allocation. When we start talking about those four key infrastructure applications, Active Directory has very different needs from Exchange. And Exchange and Active Directory have very different needs from SQL. And SharePoint has a real interesting set of resource needs. And so our ability to allocate resources and do it effectively is really pretty important. One of the things that all of you know when you start working in an IT environment, you don't generally turn on resource allocation and leave it alone. You don't say, all right, we're going to go ahead and give the Exchange server, let's give the Exchange server 8 gigabytes of memory, and that looks like a reasonable allocation to me, so we'll leave it at that. We'll give it, 4 CPU cores and that looks good, so we'll leave it there. Usually it's a process of allocation, monitoring, reallocation, monitoring, reallocation, monitoring. And we actually get a sense and feel for how the application lives and how it uses resources and when it needs more resources. And we start to see things like Hyper-V's ability to dynamically allocate memory, for example, as a big benefit to us because we realize that there are usage patterns associated with our applications. Unlike the old physical world where we built a box and the box had RAM and the box had CPU and the box had disk space, in the virtual environment, I'm not stuck with a single resource allocation. Instead, I can allocate and reallocate resources from a resource pool and provide the maximum amount of resources that an app might need, while at the same time continuing to also continue to maintain its functionality. I want to eliminate downtime and data loss. When I move to virtual environments, the first thing that everyone asks is, I'm worried about moving my apps to a virtual environment because I can't afford to lose data. Yeah, none of us can. Let's talk about some technical solutions. The first thing that was really important when we start talking about Exchange, SQL, SharePoint, and Active Directory, in order to run them in a virtual environment, realistically, we want to have Microsoft's endorsement before we do this. Now, I know lots of you ran those big four applications in your virtual environments long before Microsoft gave you the stamp of approval, right? You're all nodding your head. Yes, still do. Backup and restore operations. How do you back up and restore to applications that are in a virtual environment? Do you use your old physical backup software or do you switch to something else? It's a big question. Replication. Gotta do it. You can't move to a virtual environment and ignore replication. It provides us with a near continuous data protection solution. Whether you use Microsoft's replication or Veeam's replication, use replication. You have to have some key form of monitoring, and it has to be something that's specifically designed to monitor virtual machines. We need to know about resource allocation. We need to know about where the virtual machine is actually running, meaning what host, and the ability to understand what the resources on that host are being used from a holistic perspective, not just from a single virtual machine perspective. Last but not least, I need management capabilities. I have to be able to do something about what I'm seeing. And so I need to be able to actually move virtual machines from host to host, migrate them live. I need to change allocations of resources. I need to fix problems associated with alerts or reporting functions. All of that has to be in place as well. So four big things, well, five big things. Support, and then the ability to backup, replicate, monitor, and manage those infrastructure workload environments. Microsoft support is the first one. Who knows what year Active Directory was supported in a virtual environment? Who said it? Yeah, 2012. How many of you ran Active Directory in your virtual machines before 2012? That's what I thought. All of you did. Here you go. We're still looking for a shortstop. Sorry. Yeah, Microsoft provides support for Active Directory in 2012, which is excellent, because now you actually have the ability to run that support call. Incidentally, I'm guessing that all of you have gone out and read the recommendations wherein we recommend that you run it in which hypervisor? Hyper-V. Yeah, of course. SharePoint, what's the recommendation? Run it in Hyper-V. Exchange? Hyper-V. SQL? Hyper-V. Does that mean it won't work in any other hypervisor? No, it doesn't. But it does mean that you're not doing it in a supported fashion. And frankly speaking, I'll be honest with you, when it comes to hypervisor coexistence, Microsoft applications are very much written to run well in the environment that Hyper-V is written in. Hyper-V is architected in a microkernelized environment. Microsoft's applications do very well in that environment. Doesn't mean they won't work in other environments, obviously, but they work very well in this one. So who is Veeam, and why is this guy standing on stage talking about Tier 1 applications and about Hyper-V? Veeam is a software company. We develop software specifically for virtualization, and we develop software that is very innovative in that virtualization space. Specifically, software that does backup, replication, monitoring, and management, which fits really nicely with this idea of tier one applications. We've currently got just over 100,000 customers. It's a nice customer base. 85,000 of them are using Veeam's backup and replication tools. About 30% of our employees do R&D. 808 of the global 2K are our customers, and 456 of the Fortune 500. So when you think, I've never heard of these guys before, what do they do? Are they new to this? No. We've been around since 2007. We're currently about to release version 8 of our products. We innovate constantly, so much so. This year, recognized by Gartner in their Magic Quadrant for visionaries for enterprise backup. Now, I am not a good toot-your-own-horn guy. Never have been. I love working for Veeam. Used to work for Microsoft. Saw the opportunity to come here and work with a great growing company that has some amazing innovative ideas, and they let me keep all of my cool Microsoft devices and actually encourage me to use more of them, so it's the best possible job. We're going to work with a couple of Veeam tools today. One of them that we'll work with is on the screen here. This is called Veeam Backup and Replication. One of the nice things that Veeam does, because we realize that this idea of multi-hypervisor coexistence will not go away, we actually build our software so that you actually have both, in this case VMware and Hyper-V, in the same interface. So you do one install, you have a single license, it runs in one console, you don't do separate products for separate hosts, it's all consolidated into one easy-to-use interface. Hypervisor-specific functionality is integrated into the piece, so if you happen to have, say, Active Directory running on a Hyper-V host, the functionality associated with Hyper-V is already built into the interface. If you happen to be using, say, SQL running on a VMware box, capabilities associated with the operations in VMware are already built into the application. Everything just works. One of the first things that Veeam did back in the 2007 timeframe, when they released version one of their product, they started using something called change block tracking. Change block tracking is simply this. When we make the initial backup of a virtual machine, the backup is a full backup. We're going to write everything. From that time forward, there would seem to be no reason to go back to that virtual machine and put the overhead on it to make another full backup, when instead I could simply use a driver on a Windows operating system that monitored the virtual machine and all of the block level changes that occurred in that VM. When those changes occur, I can actually write those changes, the changed blocks, into something called a changed block tracking file, or CTP file. Now, when the time comes for us to make our next incremental backup, instead of going back to the initial virtual machine that we want to make the backup from, I don't have to do that because I already know all of the block level changes that occurred. I simply take them from the CTP file and write them to whatever disk it is that I'm using to store that data. Now, the thing about this concept is that it dramatically improves the backup performance for your virtual machines. We say it's up to 20 times faster. This works in both VMware and in Hyper-V environments. Both VMware and Hyper-V leverage change block tracking. Everybody asks me, does it also work on cluster shared volumes? It absolutely does. So yes, you can do backups in clusters as well, and recovery. I will be honest with you, everybody can do backup. Every provider out there, you can do backup. You can go out, you can get one of Microsoft's tools, it's a nice development kit, you can go out and write your own backup suite. It's not hard to do. What really sets us apart is the ability to recover. So let's talk about some fun recovery tools and then I'll actually show you some of these. So Veeam patented something called vPower technology. vPower gives us the ability to publish the contents of a backup file as a data store and then allow the host to connect to that data store. What that means is, let's say you take a backup of your SQL server. Now the backup from Veeam includes everything associated with that virtual machine. VHDX, VHD files, binary files, snapshot files, configuration data, everything associated with the VM, part of the backup. Now, when I want to get that backup back, when I need it back online, the traditional process would be go find the backup, copy everything associated with it, restore it back to the original production data store, start all of those files, play the transaction logs forward, and I should have a recovered backup. And I would measure that time in hours and maybe even days. With something like vPower capability, I change. Instead, when I want to recover a failed virtual machine, even if it happens to be a SQL virtual machine, I have the capability to mount that backup file in its backup data store, start the virtual machine from that location. We call that instant VM recovery. I also have the ability to run what's called Shore backup, meaning I could actually take those backup files, mount them in a sandbox environment, an isolated environment, and actually test the backup. So I make sure that it actually functions. I can restore using something called Universal Application Item Restore. And of course, I have a development testing sandbox. We talked about it already. Let's talk about instant VM recovery here. Fast, readily available, and buys you time. When we say fast, readily available, and buys you time, when we have a failure of a virtual machine that's hosting an infrastructure workload, there are two things that we find problematic. The first one is the data loss piece. We don't want to lose the data. But the one that's probably most impactful is actually the downtime piece. So let's say that we're running, let's use Exchange as our example. If your Exchange server drops, how long before the first help desk call? It's not going to be long. We're going to measure that time in seconds, maybe minutes if we're lucky. Maybe you've got your users trained and they know you batch emails on a 2-minute cycle and they know that after 2 minutes I should be receiving new emails. The likelihood is, though, one of your users is writing an email and they're going to hit send 3 seconds after your Exchange server has dropped and they're going to get an error message and call your help desk. So how long do you have to recover the Exchange server before you would consider it impacting your organization? He says 5 minutes. I say you have less. I say you have 2. So how am I going to get this back online in 2 minutes? It's a good question. So instant VM recovery actually can do just that. So here's our server. We'll pretend it's our Exchange box and it happens to crash and burn. At this point, all of our users no longer have Exchange service. Some of them will recognize it as they're sending emails. Some of them aren't going to recognize it because Exchange, their mailbox is simply open. They aren't actually doing anything with it. Now, hopefully, as an IT team, we recognize it immediately because we should have great monitoring software already in place. It's going to kick off an alert to us that says, hey, the Exchange server just went down. Do something about it. And maybe we've even taken the extra steps, because you could do this, to actually make an automated instant VM recovery. We could just script it all out. If the Exchange server goes down, I want you to kick off an automated VM recovery with the most recent backup. If it does, awesome. If not, we just get the notification, which is not coming by email. Yeah, hopefully you've set up SMS notifications, text-based notifications. Otherwise, this is not going to be... Maybe we're lucky and it happened at 10 a.m. on a Monday morning when all of our network operations center guys are sitting in front of their machines checking the health status of Exchange. Not very likely, but it'd sure be cool if it happened then. No, the reality is it's going to happen Sunday night at 10 p.m., just after you've gone to bed. Now, we've got a backup of our Exchange server. It's over there in our compressed, deduplicated backup data store, maybe a... network attached SAN, something like that. Now, we know where the backup file is. All we really have to do is go and start the backup file. Now, when I say start the backup file, remember, we can actually mount the contents of the backup file on the backup storage and simply start it from there. Now, we say the backup will be back to work in 2 minutes or less. We actually have a number of customers who measure this time in seconds. And we hope that that's the way that it works for you. We're fond of under-promising and over-delivering. So we say 2 minutes or less, and your experience will be less. Now, at this point, I've got a production Exchange server back up and running, and we've done it in less than 2 minutes. So hopefully we've mitigated our help desk response and the calls that we're going to get from our users. Question on the front row.
How do you deal with the duplicate name on the domain?
He says... Oh, what a good question. I like it. You've already got a memory stick. He said, how am I going to... He says, how are you going to deal with the duplication that's going to come back and haunt us here? And that's a super question. Now, at this point, I've got a couple of different options, right? Remember, these are virtual machines. They're not physical machines. I can run them from whatever location I want, on whatever host I want. They're totally portable. They can run independent of one another. So I've got a couple options. What can I do here? Well, let's say my initial virtual machine just had a hiccup. I can start it right back up and shut this guy down, the backup. Everything's fine. I could start... I could start my crashed and burned copy in an isolated sandbox-style environment, verify that it's functional, then bring it back online. Remember, I'm surprised he didn't ask this question too. You're running it from backup storage. That's probably slower than slow. Yeah, you're probably right. I didn't build my backup data repository on a SAN that had high-speed spindles because why would I? And so at this point, one of the other options would be to simply take the existing virtual machine that's running on backup storage and run a live migration process and migrate it over to my production storage environment. So your question is well placed. What do I do from here? Well, you have lots of options. You can bring the initial or the original Exchange VM back online, or I can migrate the backup to the production environment and go forward from there. Now, in the backup files, if we've been doing incremental backup well, I should actually have the most recent transaction logs, and I should be able to play those forward as well. So I shouldn't lose, if anything. Let's talk Shore Backup for a second. Since we're kind of onto this path, when I'm running a Tier 1 application like SQL, like Exchange, like SharePoint, like Active Directory, when I make the backups of those virtual machines, I have to do something beyond checking that box that says validate the backup completed successfully. Because all they're doing is checksum. I need more than a checksum. I need to actually be able to take the virtual machine and its infrastructure workload. I want to start it and I want to test it. And I don't just want to test the one VM, I actually want to test them as a group. So let's say I have those big four virtual machines. If I want to test my Exchange server, I'm going to take the backup of the Exchange server, set it into a isolated sandbox environment, and I'm going to put the Active Directory domain controller in there with it, and I'm going to start them in an order. So I'm going to bring up the domain controller, then I'm going to bring up the Exchange server, then I'm going to bring up whatever other associated servers that I might have that I want to test in conjunction with it. Now I can actually test what I have in a backup and make sure that everything is fully functional. The last thing we want is for you to have the experience of, well, I checked the verify backup box only to find that your backups are just as corrupt as your original machines. I saw a hand over here. That's a great question. So he says, when we do the backups, are these just snapshot backups? Or are we actually doing full functional backups where we go in and truncate logs associated with SQL, Exchange, SharePoint, et cetera? We're actually doing full functional backups.
So they're block-level.
Block-level backups. We actually use something called application-aware image processing. You'll enable that in conjunction with your backup so that you actually get, just as the title suggests, the ability to go in, especially with SQL and Exchange, and truncate those logs. I get quiescence out of the app. Yes, good question. So how does Shore Backup work? With a Shore Backup environment, I actually go in and I make my backups. I use the same vPower capability to mount the backup so that I can still access and use it, only instead of running it in an exposed production network, I run it in an isolated virtual network. We use a virtual switch. That switch will provide the basis for the virtual network. You've seen them in both Hyper-V and VMware environments. It's easy to build. Once I have the virtual network isolated from the functional or production network environment, now I can start VMs. At this point, I can build verification jobs. I can actually test the VM, test operating systems, test applications, run reports against the apps. The idea here is that now I get a very full-featured testing environment that I can use in conjunction with an application, and I can automate all of it. So all of this supports PowerShell scripting. If you want to go in and write your own scripts, you're welcome to do so. That way you can script testing and operations, run them on the fly. Question?
SQL Server, Exchange, and all those applications are great, but Active Directory is unique because it does authentication.
Mm-hmm.
And because it does authentication, not only based upon time, but also upon the access to the rest of the network, having a starting up a VM for authentication would seem to cause a whole lot of problems for Active Directory.
So he says Active Directory is a unique application because there's actually a time associated with Active Directory, and he's right. He says, wouldn't it cause some interesting challenges running Active Directory or starting an Active Directory virtual machine on a network? Yeah, there are some interesting challenges. We've developed some interesting techniques to handle them. I should pay you to sit on the front row. What are you doing tomorrow at 4? I've got... Just kidding. Yeah, there are some unique challenges, and we handle them actually using Microsoft's recommended way. We'll talk about those here in just a couple of minutes. That's a great question. I saw another hand. Yes? He says, so is there another hypervisor on the opposite side where I have my compressed deduplicated data store? And the answer is no. It's just a data store. So when you think about a hypervisor, and this is critical, right? The hypervisor host is simply providing me access to resources, right? Remember, everything from the virtual machine layer down is abstracted from the virtual machine. That's why we have a hypervisor. So you can connect multiple different physical disk resources beneath a hypervisor host. Some of those could be direct attached. Some of them can be network attached. It doesn't matter. So the hypervisor host itself only needs to reside on the host, doesn't need to reside on the compressed. Continue. So he says, how do we do the testing when these guys are all still live? Everything in that little cloud-based environment has been isolated from the production network by a virtual switch. That way I've got an isolated network. It uses the same IP addresses. We duplicate it exactly, but we use IP masquerading to masquerade that network from the rest of the production environment. So they just don't even know it's there. And it's incredibly functional. It's a great question. Yes?
Do you have backup solutions for hosts as well?
Do we have backup solutions for hosts as well? The way that we would do it is say, back up all the virtual machines on that host. Yeah, so you could do... That's a great question. So what about the actual configuration of the host hypervisor itself? Veeam does not do host hypervisor backup, and we don't do it for a couple of reasons. First, physical architecture is different than virtual architecture. Yes. Second, when it comes right down to it, this idea of host architecture, it's really a throwaway architecture, right? I can build any host anywhere at any time. Yes, Active Directory, very much the same. You're right. Active Directory is a portable architecture as well. You're absolutely right. We had to make things easier and better in terms of what we were looking for in Tier 1 applications. I told you earlier that one of the challenges with Tier 1 applications was downtime and data loss, and that's absolutely the case. We're going to spend some time talking about something that Veeam has built into their applications called the Veeam Explorers. And Veeam Explorers simply change the way we think about recovering content from a specific application. Veeam's built Explorers for Active Directory, Exchange, SharePoint, and SQL. They actually came in a different order, just like in the Microsoft world, Active Directory came last. I think it came last with us because support came in 2012. We actually started with Exchange support first, so I'll show you some of the Exchange stuff, then we'll talk Active Directory, we'll talk SharePoint, and we'll talk about SQL. Why is this of value to me? Traditionally speaking, if I ran Exchange, SharePoint, SQL, or Active Directory in a physical environment, data restoration was uniquely challenging. So much so that we had directory services restore mode. Remember that when you used to have to reboot your machine in order to restore Active Directory? Yeah, there were some interesting challenges associated with recoveries. And they took a long time in almost every case with a lot of complexity. And they just shouldn't really be that way. When we make the move to virtualization, one of the inherent benefits of moving to virtualization is the abstraction that's provided by the hypervisor to the operating system. The operating system now no longer has that underlying tie to the physical hardware. And it's liberating. When we take that away, our ability to do all kinds of things, not just recovery and backup, becomes so much better. Portability no longer becomes an issue. Let's have some fun and let's do some demonstration. I'm actually going to have to touch that box. I won't touch the Surface unit. So what we're looking at here is Veeam's backup and replication tool on the screen. I'll apologize for the small print. I need to be able to get as much on the screen as I can here. We're going to begin and we're going to start with an Exchange server. Now in this case, this happens to be an Exchange server backup. And we're going to work in an environment that's called the sci-fi domain. I'm a big fan of sci-fi TV and sci-fi movies. And so we're going to use those as our base for operations today. We're going to begin with a simple concept. We're going to pretend that we've gotten a help desk call from Captain Kirk. And Captain Kirk says, I have a problem. I have an email with attachments that I've accidentally deleted. It's gone from our deleted items folder. Somebody on our network has a policy that when I close Outlook, the deleted items folder is deleted. My stuff's all gone, and I have to have this back right now. It wasn't. I need to say it like he would say. I don't have a good Captain Kirk. We'll get to Chewbacca, then we'll be good. We're going to go in using Veeam's backup and replication tool with its associated Veeam Explorer. So here's my backup file of my Exchange server. I say, Captain Kirk, it's not a big deal. Let's go in and let's get what it is that you need. So we're going to go ahead. We're going to select the Exchange server backup. We're going to put a restore reason here, and we're going to call it Captain Kirk request. And we'll click next. Because you always document everything you do too, right? Yeah, I knew you did. Nobody clicks past those things. Now at this point, we're actually going to go out and find the database. In this case, it happens to be on a remote data store. We're going to go find that database on the remote data store. And you'll notice, here's the actual file system of the virtual machine. Now, I know that this is an Exchange server. And the application apparently knows as well, because look, it's lit up the ribbon item that says Exchange Items. So I'm going to go ahead and click the Exchange Items option. And now it's going to go, and it's going to find our Exchange database. It's going to mount the Exchange database in Veeam Explorer for Exchange. Notice how it's all integrated into a single interface? I love that. That look and that feel and that operation is really easy. So at this point, I'm going to say, okay, Captain Kirk, what is it that you're looking for? I'm going to go down. I'm going to find Captain Kirk. I'm going to find his inbox. And I'm going to say, what you looking for? And he says, well, there's an email with attachments, and it's from Buck Rogers. I'm going to say, yeah, I've got an email from Buck Rogers, and it looks like it has some attachments in it. It looks like it says, I'm excited to be a part of the team. May I suggest some colorful outfits and some really grooving theme music? Now, any self-respecting help desk guy is going to look at the pictures, right? That is stunning. It came up on my... He wants to see... No, I can't. I know, I'm bringing it over. Hang on. That's what I get for extending. Oh, yeah. I shouldn't, all right, I'm a glutton for punishment. That's horrible. So there's an outfit I've got to have. He also has Buck Rogers in the 25th Century theme.
In the year 1987, yeah, NASA launched the last of America's deep space probes.
Cool.
Aboard this compact starship, a lone astronaut, Captain William Buck Rogers, was to experience cosmic forces.
Love it. See the granularity? This is the idea. Now, you make the expectation, as do I. I expect that when I go into my backup file that this is the granularity that I get. I want to be able to see, mount, and access every piece in every attachment, in every email message from every user in my Exchange environment. And I want to be able to recover them just as fast as I can click recover. So in this case, I want to be able to go to that Buck Rogers message, and I want to be able to right-click it, and I want to be able to have a list of options, and I want one of them to be restore back to Exchange. So I want to be able to say restore items. I also want to be able to do export to desktop, export to a PST, just use Exchange and send it back to him so it comes right back to his mailbox. Save it to desktop, save it to a message file. I want lots of options for what I can do. Question. Is there a size limitation on the PST file? No. Nope. The only limitations would be ones that Microsoft had put in place for either Outlook or for Exchange, and as far as I know, they've overcome those restrictions. So I saw a hand over here. Are there any type of audit logs that we can use for users restoring? Absolutely. You could use a backup and restore, just enable it in standard auditing. You would also expect to see this as part of your monitoring. So using vManagement Pack, which we have not talked about yet, we'll talk about here in a few minutes. Yeah, we'd absolutely expect to watch and monitor what's happened. Now, there's another question I'm surprised you haven't asked yet. With a tool like this, where I could go and back up a copy of my virtual or my Exchange server, and then I can go in and I can get this kind of granularity in recovery, isn't that potentially a security risk? Yeah, that's a significant potential security risk. So you have to know that behind the scenes, the only reason that this is allowing this to happen on my server is because I have the appropriate administrative credentials already supplied. If I didn't have enterprise admin credentials at this juncture, it would simply say, oh, I'm sorry, you can't open that database. Yeah. So there are certainly security credentials that are being implemented and used here. You simply don't see them because I already supplied them. So when we start talking about something like Veeam Explorer for Exchange, give me an estimate. What do you think the recovery time on that email attachment is? Yeah, it's as fast as I can click to it, find it, and recover it to the database. In fact, it's easy to see how an actual help desk call could result in complete recovery before the call ended. So no more of this, yeah, we'll go ahead and issue a help desk ticket, and we'll work on it for the next hour or day or whatever, and then you'll see a response resolution. You could open the ticket if you wanted, recover the Exchange item, and close the ticket on the same call. And you'd spend more time opening and closing the ticket than you did on the Exchange recovery. Yes, over here. Say that one more time. This is a great question. So is it possible for me to extend this functionality out to the end user? It is possible. The way that you would do it, Veeam has a tool called Enterprise Manager, and it's actually a tool that extends the Veeam interface functionality that you see here out through IIS to individual users. Now, the challenge here would be that in order to use that interface and use it successfully, I would have to go on a one-by-one basis and assign credentials to the individual user so that they could recover their own stuff. Now, realistically, we don't expect that that's going to happen. Instead, it's much more likely that we're going to delegate to a specific manager or to a specific group manager, for example, the rights to do something like that.
Yeah, well,
Yeah, what happens if he deletes everything?
You don't have users that would delete everything.
See, now you... He says, what happens if my users delete all that stuff? It very realistically could happen. You do have to very seriously think about who you're delegating control of your resources to. There's no question about that. Another one up here.
What's the max number of exchange servers that you can actually use this on? Because obviously most organizations have more than one SQL instance, and we have three exchange.
Yeah, very good question. So he said, what's the maximum number of instances of Exchange, SQL, et cetera, that I can use a tool like this on? There's no limitation. Now, keep in mind here, you're doing this on a one backup at a time basis, right? So because of that, it's really just a matter of connecting to the appropriate instance. Now, when we transition over and we talk about SQL, generally speaking, we don't do total SQL database recovery. It's usually transactional-based recovery or item-level recovery, which is exactly what we're looking at here. And so when we talk about SQL or Veeam Explorer for Microsoft SQL, this is really valuable because it does a couple of things. First, I have the database. It's mounted and it's visible, and that's really critical, because trying to do this the old-fashioned way and remembering what the organizational structure of an Exchange database is pretty tough. And the same with the SQL environment. Most of our users, I think, would be hard-pressed to know where their SQL databases actually reside. Which files are the ones that they actually want back? I mean, it's a challenge, and if you don't work with it every day, you just wouldn't know. Here we can abstract that away and make it easy. Go ahead.
How about licensing?
Oh, somebody had to use the L word. I already gave you a... He says, how do we license this? Per user, per device? We license it per socket, per CPU socket on the host machine. So all of Veeam's software is licensed that way. So let's say, for example, you're using a Dell R710 server, right? That server's super popular. There's two CPU sockets in it. I find it in just about every small business, mid-sized business I walk into. If they say to me, hey, we're using this R710 server. It's our Hyper-V host. We're running 8 VMs on it. It works fantastic. I say, great. In order to purchase Veeam licenses, they buy one license for each CPU socket, two per Dell R710. And that's it. That way, number of users, number of virtual machines, those things are all too variable, right? And it really isn't fair to penalize a business because they have the ability to run a higher density of virtual machines on a, set of hardware than another business who doesn't. So only licensing is based on the CPU socket.
Nope.
We don't license based on the type of virtual machine implementation. We don't care whether you run SQL, Exchange, Active Directory, SharePoint, whatever. It's just the CPU socket on the host machine. That way you pick and choose what the configuration is. Again, yes. Oh, this is a good question. You can move to the front row now. So he said, no company is 100% virtualized. A lot of them will run physical and virtualized. Can I use this software in the physical environment too? No. The two architectures are very, very different. The functionality that you're seeing here is because of the hypervisor. If the hypervisor doesn't exist, this functionality doesn't either. We have to go back to the old block-level backup and block-level recovery if you switch back to the physical environment. Here, I can take advantage of the abstraction of the hypervisor and get great recovery. So unfortunately, no, Veeam does not do physical backup. What do we recommend? There are tons of great physical backup providers out there. We don't have any partners for the physical world. We let you pick and choose. Not only that, but as we move, people ask all the time, this is software. What kind of hardware should I use to support it on the back end? Do you have any preferred disk providers? We are hardware agnostic across the board. So if you want to use NetApp, fantastic. HP, great. You like, you know, Drobo Sans, fabulous. Use what you will. You want to use a Microsoft Store Simple device to migrate that data to the cloud after you've backed it up? Fantastic. We love it. Question back here. Oh, that's a good question. So what about tape? Veeam does support tape. We heard it from our customers years and years and years, and I begged them, please don't use tape, please don't use tape. But the reality is a lot of people still are stuck with tape, right? Even they'd like to move, but their business model just won't allow it. So yes, we do support tape. The way that we do it, you back up your stuff to disk first, you transition over to a tape archive. We don't have a preferred partner. Again, any supported Windows tape archive is a supported Veeam archive. So you're welcome to use that. My recommendation, don't use tape. If you haven't been bit by a tape backup, it will come. It's not fun. If you don't use tape, how do you use offsite storage? I don't know if you've heard. There's this thing called the cloud. Look, he's like, no, no, no. Yes, yes, yes. I know it's not trustworthy. The security's not as good as you want. The data transfer rates aren't high enough. I've heard all of it. It's FUD. Maybe the data transfer rate, but that's something you can control. He's going to back up to you. I'm shutting my mic off. Yeah, there are tons of options. I'm a big fan of cloud-based storage. Yes?
Since this is a one-to-one backup, one-to-one, that means that the backup that you're creating on a block level is exactly identically the same size as the original. That means when you're talking about transactional logs for huge databases on SQL, we could be talking terabytes with the space.
So he says, this is a one-for-one backup. If I do a full backup of a virtual machine, it's going to have a corresponding backup size just like the original. And that is true to a point. We do offer the capability for you to use compression and deduplication. So you can use both of those on your storage mechanisms. But yes, if you happen to have a large-scale SQL server with enormous transaction logs, yeah, you're going to have a backup with enormous transaction logs. You're moving that data right in with the backup. And that's the point. You cannot lose the data. Question up front. I love it. I should pay. You've already got a memory stick? Oh, you need one. You might have a shortstop there. It's possible. So what happens if I use Instant VM Recovery, and I've got this virtual machine, and it's running my Exchange server, and users are sending emails, receiving emails, transactions are being processed into that database, and I decide now, hey, I want to go back and use my old Exchange server. What is it that we have that can take point-in-time images of a data?
Snapshots.
Yeah, we use snapshots in conjunction with the virtual machine. So that when, and we don't use it just here, we also use it in conjunction with replication, so that you have the opportunity to fail over and fail back and without the data loss. It's a great question. So we simply use a snapshot in conjunction with the VM. That way everything from the time the VM starts rolling forward, saved into that snapshot, now we can apply the snapshot to whichever becomes our final VM. It's a good question, a smart question. Let's talk a little bit more about this concept of Exchange Server backup and recovery, and then let's switch over. I want to show you a little bit of Active Directory recovery and what it might look like. So when I work with Exchange Server recovery, granularity in recovery is a critical thing. I have to be able to recover everything associated with the virtual machine, everything associated with the operating system, everything associated with the application. So in this case, you'll notice I can actually recover the entire Exchange data store. I can export the whole data store if we wanted. There's that PST file. How big could the PST be? Could be as big as the store. So we could recover everything down to calendar items, contacts, Everything associated with that individual exchange database can be recovered directly. So, all right. Sorry, Wilma. Sorry, Buck. There's our exchange database. What about other systems? Here's a Windows 7 box. This is an old Windows 7 box. We use this concept of an explorer, like we would find in Microsoft's Windows Explorer, to be able to recover items in all kinds of environments. So a user may call us and say, hey, I've got a old Windows 7 machine that used to be mine, but I don't have it anymore. I'm now using a new Windows 8 Surface unit. But my boss told me that we used to do backups of those old Windows 7 boxes. And I say, yeah, I happen to have one. It's a couple of years old. It's December 2012, so a little more than a year, year and a half old now. What is it that you're looking for? Well, the user says, I used to have this folder of PowerPoint presentations, and there's a presentation in there I'd really like to be able to get back. We'll say, okay, I've got a user request for recovery on a PowerPoint presentation folder. I find the appropriate virtual machine. We'll open it. Let's see, users, sci-fi user. I'll ask the user, what is it that you're looking for? Well, I had a bunch of slide presentations in the My Documents folder. Well, there they are. Which one is it that you're looking for? Well, I used to have this one. It was Windows 7 Tips and Tricks. Yeah, well, there it is. And at this point, I can pick and choose. Why don't we just copy it to, and I'll actually copy it to, I don't know, how about my desktop? That'll work. That's it. And now the file is actually on my desktop. I can see it. You guys can't because it's being overlaid here. I could send it right back to the user. Now, in this case, that virtual machine is no longer functional, right? It's nothing more than a backup of something that we have moved out of our organization. But the user's data is all still there, and it's recoverable again in the course of a help desk call. So we call it instant file level recovery. You can go into the operating system, inside the applications, inside of the individual files, and recover data for the user. Again, does it require permissions? Absolutely. My administrator's permissions are what allowing all of this to occur. So we love the idea of Veeam backup and replication because it makes the process of working with applications, application item level recovery, really, really easy. Let's just for a minute mess with, let's see. Let's go with Veeam Explorer for Active Directory. Now, Veeam Explorer for Active Directory is actually currently in a beta edition. So we haven't officially released this. It'll come out a little bit later this year. But functionally speaking, we're ready to go, so I'll show it to you here. Active Directory uses something called an NTDS database, right? NTDS.DIT, that's the Active Directory database. You're going to use that database in conjunction with this tool. I happen to have mine. It's the same database that we just used in conjunction with Exchange. So it's the sci-fi database. So when I go in and I look at ntds.dit, there's my database, sci-fi.com. It contains everything associated with Active Directory. When I say everything, everything. All of the properties, all of the attributes, all of the objects, everything associated with that database is included here when I have the opportunity for recovery. So one of the challenges, and it only has a single computer account because I only have a single Exchange server. Let's say you run into this circumstance where you have a deleted computer account and you want to return that back to the network with its previously existing permissions. That's awesome as long as you can remember its password. How many of you keep a log of your computer account passwords? Yeah, that's what I thought. I knew my front row guys would. It's part of being on the front row. Yeah, most of us don't. Yeah, most of us don't. And we're kind of stuck at that point with, oh, I guess we'll create a new computer account, assign it the same passwords, give it the same names. It doesn't need to be that way. In fact, you could simply take your existing computer account and simply say, I want to restore that right back to the sci-fi.com domain. Now, if you're interested, you can actually go and look at all of the attributes associated with the account. So it will enumerate all of them. Everything is there associated with that count. Now, there are some things. So, for example, here's the Unicode password. It's hidden for obvious reasons, right? So we do actually provide layers of protection inside of that database recovery tool as well. Now, not only can I do that with computer accounts, but of course, I could do it with any Active Directory object. So if you wanted to restore an organizational unit, fabulous. You want to restore user accounts, you can do that too. So let's go in here and let's pretend that we had accidentally deleted Captain Kirk's user account, only let's pretend, just for fun, that we don't want to restore Captain Kirk's account directly back to the Active Directory database. Instead, we want to do a little bit more of a roundabout approach. We want to take Captain Kirk's account. We're actually going to export it from here, drop it onto, I don't know, a folder or a desktop. Let's actually do that. Let's export it to desktop. That'll be easy enough. One object has been exported. Yes, there he is. I'll move him over so you can see him. So there's Captain Kirk's account. Let's go and look at his properties. And you can see he's now just an LDF. Now, in my case, my server looks at that and says that's a SQL Server database file. It's because I don't have LDIFDE associated with the account. You would simply use LDIFDE, and now I've got access to that object, and I can actually work on it and restore it with LDIF if I want. So the functionality that I'm expecting from something like Exchange extends directly into Active Directory. Now, the nice thing about this is that not only could I use this to restore the items, but I could also recover passwords for the items. So I could recover user passwords on their behalf, reset passwords, all of those things that I don't traditionally get with the Active Directory restore bin. Or in the event that it's no longer part of the Active Directory recycle bin, I can restore here. Question? So he says, when we restore the user account, what happens to all of its attributes? In this case, all of the attributes come with the user. Now, if I don't want that, then I would do something like you just saw. I would pull it out, move it to LDIFDE, and I would use that to set custom attributes that would or would not be included with the restore. So you get the option to have both. Now, in the vast majority of cases, we're recovering items that we want all the attributes to come with them, but we do recognize as you suggest, there are certainly times when I don't want all the attributes and I want to be able to customize them. We use LDIFDE to do that. It's a super question. Did I already give you a USB stick? I don't know if I can throw that far. There's a reason I don't play second base for the Houston. Look, he's like, yeah, throw it. I'll throw it if you can catch it. Oh, that wasn't bad. Thank you. Short hop. He's got a shortstop potential. So when we talk recovery, and we start talking about application recovery, I'm hoping that you get a good, strong sense and feel for the fact that item-level recovery in application-based environments really is evolving. It's much different than we've seen in the past. One more over here. Good question. So what versions of Active Directory are actually supported for item-level recovery? And it's 2008 to present. Anything from the modern hypervisor era or later. Unfortunately, not back to 2000 yet. I don't know that we will extend that functionality back there or not. We've heard that question a couple of times already. Currently, 2008 and later. Yes, good question. He says, is that the same with SQL? And that is the same with SQL as well. Yes. Let's chat replication for a few minutes. Why do I want to use replication? I told you earlier that replication is a key component of any virtual environment. When we talk about replication, we're talking about making a copy of my virtual machine, moving it somewhere else, and then doing continuous update synchronizations between the source and the target. Why do I want it? Because It is the easiest way to get near continuous data protection at the lowest possible cost. You can go out and buy a continuous data protection scheme or system. Its hardware and software components will end up costing you six figures. It's the reality. He says, you're only as good as your last backup. Should I still do backups if I'm doing replication? Yes. Yeah, we do both. Backup is there as a RPO, RTO, a recovery protection, while replication is here as a continuous data protection. The ability to fail over is what we're looking for out of replication. Monitoring and management. We're going to finish on this topic, and then I'll leave some time for you for questions. It is important that you understand that Veeam is a piece of software. It's not hardware. It's used to manage virtual machines, but its management capability really is focused in backup and replication. When you want true management of the VMs, the hosts, the underlying infrastructure, you want System Center. It's the best management framework in existence. Veeam builds a set of tools called the Veeam Management Pack, and that tool runs with System Center Operations Manager. It gives you direct insights into the underlying physical and virtual infrastructure and gives you detailed alerts, reports, customization functionality that out of the box will just make your network better. We have customers and clients on a regular basis who will have our system architects come in the morning. They'll set up the Veeam Management Pack in conjunction with SCOM. And generally speaking, before their lunch time is over, our architects always take your teams to lunch. Before the lunch is over, the IT team is receiving notifications from Management Pack about how they might reconfigure their virtual environments to make them significantly better. It happens rapidly, and it's easy to do. Question?
System Center can manage more than one virtual host. So does that mean once this is on System Center on one machine, you can manage multiple hosts as well?
He says you get multiple host management capability as a System Center. Will Veeam do the same thing? Yes. In fact, we have it running at Fortune 500 clients, and they're managing thousands. GameStop is a great example, right? GameStop's got, I don't know, as I recall, 5,000 to 6,000 hosts. We use Veeam Management Pack in conjunction with it. They love it. They're one of our strongest proponents. I love to hear customers say, we love your stuff. What does it look like? Here's what it looks like. I get everything, application layer all the way down to the bare metal. The view is continuous. People ask, how do you get the bare metal information? How am I seeing what's happened on an individual fan or with a CPU? We gather that data from the SimSmash database in VMware vSphere environments, or we gather it directly from Hyper-V. So we get the data from both. Did I just say you can monitor both VMware and Hyper-V? I did, and you can. Here's what my virtual environment might look like. Now notice this is inside of System Center Operations Manager. You add the Management Pack to SCOM, now I get the capability to see everything. And when I say everything, I mean everything. See your disks, see your databases, see the underlying infrastructure workloads, see the individual applications. All of that is clickable and you can work with it or interact with it directly. So when I want to get information about what's going on with the little red X on a given item, select it, open it. It's tied directly to both VMware and Microsoft's knowledge bases. We get root cause analysis functionality built in. Very, very smart system. We call it deep monitoring and reporting, and the Veeam MP filters the events, performance metrics. We include all of that stuff. How many? More than 850 different events that we watch for. Those alerts are built in. We've had a lot of experience with this over the course of the years, and so best practices are also included. We'll make suggestions and changes as needed. Yes, it does work for clusters, hosts, data stores, virtual machines, and your backup and replication environment. So you get monitoring end-to-end. Let's give you a quick call to action, and then we'll do some Q&A with you. If you aren't virtualizing your Tier 1 applications, if you're waiting for some reason, today is the day. I'll give you permission, go out, virtualize your Tier 1 applications. There's no longer a significant risk associated with doing so. In fact, I would say there's less risk running a virtualized Tier 1 app versus running a physical Tier 1 app. It's just the way it should be done. If you haven't used Veeam, today's a good day to try that one as well. www.veeam.com. Simply go out and download one of the trial editions. We will ask for your username and password. One of the things that I love about Veeam is we support all of our software, even the trial editions. So as you create that account, it's the same account that you use to log on to our forums. Should you ever need to call our help desk, you'll say, hey, here's my Veeam account. They'll say, great, you're using our trial edition, and they'll help you. Our support is amazing. You won't need it, but if you do, it will be there. All right, let's open it up for question and answers. What else do you guys want to know? Question on the front row. Yeah, good question. So if I'm backing up a cluster, I'm going to have more than one node. I'm probably going to want to license the nodes. You're right. Yep, absolutely. Others? Yes? Super question. What about connectivity to Azure and Exchange Online? Connectivity to Azure, yes. In fact, one of the most recent things that we're working on, I've been messing around with the Store Simple team, using Store Simple as a direct connect to Azure, and we simply use Veeam and connect to Store Simple like any other data repository. That way I get this really nice streamlined effect where my data archive goes to Azure, but my ability to recover is not really impeded for doing so. So I love that. We also have a cloud edition of our product that will directly tie to a Windows Azure account. So you'll use Windows Azure's blob storage and actually be able to store data directly to that if you want. It's a good question. Oh, Exchange Online. Today, no Exchange Online support. We don't have a direct tie to Office 365. Should Microsoft decide to open that up and allow that to occur, we would likely follow suit and develop a capability to do that. They haven't done that yet. So if they do, we'll smile and be happy they did. You're not the first. In fact, I hear that question multiple times a week. I saw another hand. Yes, up here. Good question. So if I use a cloud-based storage provider, will I use a special port on my firewall? I will. And I'll actually specify that when I configure the account with the provider. Veeam supports Azure, of course. In fact, they're my preferred. We also support the other 14 main online providers for cloud-based storage. And if you don't use one of those, we do have OpenStack provider as well. So, yeah. Other questions? Yeah, good question. He said, so we have a set of PowerShell commandlets and we can draw information from Veeam into PowerShell? Yes. In fact, you can script directly from PowerShell using those commandlets and script operations for backup replication and for the management piece. Yeah. He said, what versions of PowerShell? I don't know how far back it goes. At least two. Now, that's a good question. That was a softball throw and a nice catch. He's got a Miami jersey on. His fish are good. He's a happy man this year. Any other questions? Yes. That's a good question. So we do work, he said, so we don't have a hardware preference, but we do definitely work with specific hardware providers to provide functional capabilities, and that's absolutely true. Are we bringing more hardware vendors online? Yes. So today, we've done some interesting projects. A lot of you use HP storage, right? And over the years, we had people come to us and say, hey, I've got this great HP left-hand system, and I can take snapshots of my virtual machines. Wouldn't it be cool if I could actually use Veeam to make a backup from the snapshot? That way I'd have no actual overhead added to that VM for backups at all. And we said, yeah, that could be done. And so we did. We did a similar thing with NetApp. So we provide support for NetApp, NetApp snapshots. Yes, we are constantly adding new and better functionality for storage vendors. We have some things in the work with a couple of other providers as well. People ask me all the time, why did you do HP first? They came to us first. That's really the only reason. We don't have a preferential way for any specific vendor. We see businesses from the very tiny up to the absolutely enormous in size, and we try and cater as much to all of them as we can. So there will be more announcements. Watch the Veeam website. Watch our Twitter feed, at Veeam. You'll see those announcements come out as we work with more and more storage partners, more and more storage vendors. That's a super question. Next version is announced already. We will have a version 8. We haven't given a final date, but later this summer. Neat stuff. Neat stuff coming there. Love our R&D. That 30% of the company that does the R&D, really, really sharp people. We're just very fortunate. Well, the light is flashing telling me we're done. So I'm going to go ahead and finish. Thanks for your attention and your time. If you have additional questions, I'll be around here the rest of the day and the rest of the week. Thanks.